fucking ash crosses on their foreheads, and we all just had to pretend that wasn't weird.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Molly Glover, Nick Glover, and Tim Wick.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, it's finally here, the Scientology episode. We talk about our experiences going to the Church of Scientology.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I am your host, Molly Glover, and I am joined, as always, by Nick Glover.
Hey.
And Tim Wick.
All hail Xenu.
All hail Xenu, motherfuckers. This is the Scientology episode that you guys have been waiting for. We, in case you are just getting caught up, during Die Laughing 2, we put out a challenge to our listeners that said if we could raise $1,000 specifically earmarked for Geeks Without God, that we would all go to the Church of Scientology, take the personality test, do the whole, like, intake thing.
We said we were going to get audited, but it turns out there's more work to get audited.
It turns out there's more money to get audited.
Yes.
It's not that it's more work. I mean, you have to pay them a significant amount of money.
Okay, it's not just money. It's also work. It's also you have to get into their shit to start getting audited.
So what they told me, in terms of that, there's a weekend seminar that you can do where it's 20 hours over 2 days.
Oh, holy fuck.
And that involves a lot of what I was told is co-auditing, which is great for if you want to become become a Scientology educator. Like, if you want to be the guy I was talking to, you should do co-auditing, because then you audit your partner and they audit you. Now, there's also a more expensive way to do it, where it's one-on-one with a legit, like, licensed
master auditor
who then just, it's one way, and they interpret your results and all that and everything, and that's where you're actually holding the e-reader, the little electrical thing and
cans.
So what we did was we each of us took the 200 question Oxford capacity analysis test,
which in America they call it something else sometimes, the ARA.
Yeah. Now, before you think, wow, 200 questions on a personality test, that's crazy long. It's not. The MMPI, which is the standard kind of psychological intake test you have to take if you're ever going to be inpatient at a hospital or things like that, is actually 1,000 questions. Mm-hmm. So to give you an idea, they are 1/5 as good as actual medicine.
Well, 1/5 is good, but their questions are, or the answers are yes, no, maybe.
Which is really not very granular.
No.
The first question on here, do you make thoughtless remarks or accusations which later you regret? So now if you say positive to that, right, that's probably a negative ding on
whatever
the final personality test. But it's like, I put a positive on that because I'm like, well, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, I talk a lot. I sometimes say things that, very opinionated things that I realize later were maybe kind of offensive. And I'm like, oh, well, I shouldn't have done that.
Yep.
And I say, I'm sorry. And I'm like, how is that?
Yeah.
With a lack of granularity there.
Yeah.
You know, if you just say, well, sure. Yeah. And so I think, you know, I ended up kind of low on this because, you know, I could, you can really look at these and go, oh, well, this is a question that if I answer positive, it's going to bring me down on this scale, but I have to be honest and say, sure, this has happened, you know, because it's not asking if it happens all the time.
Well,
it's just saying,
they prefaced it. They said, answer in the present tense.
Yep.
If it's something you used to do, but you don't presently do, don't say yes, say no.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be an evaluation of your present mindset or your present like mental status. They also tell you to answer fairly quickly and not to dwell or think on them.
Well, sure. And that's where I come off going, do you do this? And I'm like, sure. Yeah, I do it. Is your opinion influenced by looking at things from the standpoint of your experiences, occupation, or training? Well, how could it not?
May I look at this? Did you take yours online or on paper? Because Nick took his on paper. I took mine online.
Yeah.
And
they're the same questions, I think.
I don't know that they are, because he just read two questions that I don't remember.
I don't remember any of the questions. I read them off, but
and one thing that I noticed is I guess a lot of them are similar, but the I liked how often they did the one thing that I felt is legit, because they do this on most most psychological or personality tests that are worth a damn will repeat questions in different ways, or they'll do it's the same question, but now it's the inverse.
Yep.
And to see if your answers match, like, do people criticize you to others, or do you feel that others often criticize you? Like they'll do things like that. Yeah. And
yeah. Well, those two questions check against each other.
Yeah.
It's definitely, I love the fact that they say that it's 200 questions for accuracy. Like, that's why there's an entire 200 questions, is so that they can be as accurate as possible.
But they,
it's like, so there's any sort of scientific validity.
They're measuring you on 1, 2, 3, 4, 10 scales. So 200, so that's basically 20 questions per axis.
So,
go ahead.
No, that's fine.
It's very much, the 10 things that they rate you on are, it's a positive, negative. It's stable, unstable. It's happy, depressed, composed, nervous, certainty, uncertainty, active, inactive, aggressive, inhibited, responsible, irresponsible, correct estimation and critical, appreciative and lack of accord, and your communication level and your withdrawnness.
Huh. Yeah. So, yeah.
Okay, well, that's what I was going to say. So I was going to talk about how we were going to rate our, like, where we all fell on the scale of things. And we'll be posting scans of our graphs so you guys can see. On each graph, there's four sections. There's super great, fantastic, no problems. There's these are sort of a problem, but it's acceptable under certain conditions. There's attention is desired for these. And then there's holy fuck, y'all need to get your head right with Xenu at the bottom.
It's acceptable under perfect conditions.
Yes, yes. And so right. I'm looking at Nick's graph, and most of his values seem to be down in the holy fuck, get right with Xenu area.
And so my one place where I'm in the ideal spot is inhibited versus aggressive, but then my active inactive one, there's two of these qualities are like they can change in the moment, they can change in the day, they said.
Mm-hmm.
So I listen to me talking like it's real, but what they said. So, and my other one that's above that acceptable line, which is also bad because the balance is the active and inactive.
That is not what I was told. I was told by my guy that if all your values were up at the very top, that is a desire. He said that's the kind of graph he would expect to see from someone who'd had years and years of auditing.
Oh, really?
Would be someone whose lines were all at the top. Because it's not about balance. It's about being these top things. You are supposed to be stable, happy, composed, certain, active, aggressive, when they say aggressive, they don't mean it pejoratively. They mean like you're aggressive, as in like you say what you mean. You live in the moment. They mean assertive.
Assertive, confident.
Yeah, yes. Which is funny because they the appreciative too is a thing. And so,
mine says I'm like negative 95 for appreciative, which is as it goes.
Mine was up in the top for stable and happy. Which the guy remarked to me a couple times was unheard of. He said he actually asked me, "Are you sure you haven't gone through auditing before?" And I was like, "Nope." And he's like, "These are very good numbers." And then he did say, however, you're not as happy as you think you are. You're not as happy as you feel you are, even. And I asked him, that was my first like autism question, was how can I not be as emotion as I feel emotion? Like, how is that? And he was like, he was totally thrown because he had a script he was reading.
Oh, yeah.
And they were, I don't know about you, Tim, but did you ask him any questions that weren't on the script?
No, I didn't, because I think we all had fairly different. My people were, the lady who read my test, she presented my sheet, and she seemed like this was all pretty new to her, and she didn't really know what to say. She was like, "We have some classes," and she took me out into the next room, and there was a bookshelf, and she pulled out a few and goes, "Well, there's this one and this one," and she's like, "I really don't know a lot about this. I'm gonna send you up to the bookstore."
And have you talked to Mike?
So she sent me up to the bookstore to talk to Mike, and he, so it is. I mean, it sounds like they did a lot more with Nick, because they were just like, "Well, this says, you know, that you're stable, you're more in an unstable, depressed. Do you feel, you know, kind of unstable and depressed?" And I said, "Well, you know, I don't know. I just quit my job and I'm trying to make a living as a freelancer. And so I'm feeling, probably a little bit anxious a little mm-hmm. bit, you know, that makes a certain amount of sense. But, you know, it seems to fit where I am right now. I don't think that I'm that way all the time.
Mm-hmm. Were you honest with them? Were you honest with them about, like,
sure,
your
totally
test results and
them.
Stuff? Like, you answered all the questions how you thought.
He didn't really go fishing for anything with me. And I guess it sounds like he went fishing with whoever was auditing you, not auditing, whoever was
interviewing assessing.
You. I'll tell you mine, because mine's also, like Tim's, it's not as in-depth. And I know Nick's got a lot to say, because he went through a lot of it. So my original appointment was set for 1:30, and I took the test online and made my appointment online. And then I got 5 emails over the course of the next 12 hours wow. asking me when I was going to set up my appointment. And I responded to each one saying, I did. It's at 1:30 on Sunday. I'm very confused. And I'm like, what's happening? And finally, I never got a response until after I'd actually already been there. And then, so I actually, Nick had a decor meeting for Convergence, and it got done. And I was like, well, fuck it. I just kind of want to get this over with. So I called up the Church of Scientology and asked if I could move my appointment up. And I said, my appointment's at 1:30. I was wondering if I could come at like noon. And she's like, well, noon is when everyone takes lunch. But, and I'm like, I can be there at 11:30. And she's like, yeah, okay, 11:30 works. And so the guy like very clearly wanted to go to lunch.
Sure.
Like, he was looking at his watch. I mean, he was very like, the room was 77 degrees with a space heater on. And I was dying. Like, it was,
wow.
But so he looked at my results, and I was very honest with the questions, but I take these tests really fast. Like, I don't hesitate when I answer. I know who I am and what I'm like. And I also could tell that that a lot of my answers were, I can tell that they're expecting someone to say yes here,
sure.
and I'm going to say no because I know who I am and what I'm like. It's like,
right.
Are you plagued with doubt? Like, nope. Like, do you worry about the future? Nope. Like, I just, because I don't usually. I mean, in general, like, it's not something I would characterize myself as like, sitting around.
I was really honest. Are you plagued with doubt? I'm like, yeah, I'm a writer. I'm like, shit, is this going to work? I don't know.
And I'm not plagued. I don't feel like I'm.
Is this going to work? Fuck, did I just fall into their trap?
Yes.
I'm trying to think of some hearings. You've seen some other ones. If I can find some, like, is your voice monotonous rather than varied in pitch? See, that's a yes for me. Do you speak slowly? No. Do you resent the efforts of others to tell you what to do? Not really. Is your life a constant struggle for survival? No. Could you agree to strict discipline? Sure. Are you always getting into trouble? You know, things like that. It's just so bizarre. But, I am always getting into trouble. So I only had 2 values that were low, and it was nervous and critical. Mm. I am, and what he told me, and this I found to be just amazing. This young guy is sitting across from me, and he's reading, and this is what he is reading off a piece of paper. So this is what he has been instructed to say to people.
Right.
And he says, you're very nervous. And you're very constantly anxious and nervous. And I said, I don't feel that. He goes, you've probably been feeling it for so long that you don't know you're not. And I'm
nice.
Oh, okay. All right. That's fair. I've had therapists say the same thing. You know, it's like depression.
Sure.
You don't think you're depressed, but you are. You just can't tell because you've been depressed for so long, whatever. So, all right, that's fine. But then he says, your critical score is very low here. Would you say that you're very critical of others? And I laughed and I said, oh yes. I have autism. I'm very judgmental and I have very strict black and white thinking. I kind of can't help it. So yes, I am very critical. Also, I'm an editor. It's kind of my job is to be critical.
Yeah.
And he goes, so that's a bad thing. And he picks up the paper and he reads off to me, you don't have many friends, and those you do don't actually like you very much. People don't enjoy spending time in your company, and strangers who meet you are often put off by you and find you to be very, like, it was basically like, nobody likes you and your friends are lies. It was very...
That definitely plays into my experience with the interview portion of the capacity analysis.
So mine was about 20 minutes, and then I was out of there.
Yeah.
And
see,
I think it helped.
Nobody was reading off of a paper with me.
Really?
It didn't feel like I was, and like I say, the lady.
It was your first day.
The lady I was with was very inexperienced.
Yeah, Mike Graff came with a little cheat sheet of paragraphs for her.
Your graph, mine did too, but your graph has these weird little cloud things on it that ours don't.
Yeah.
Mine didn't, and Tim's doesn't.
They marked yours up.
That means those two things can be, they're printed on there on mine.
I know.
Actually, they're not, yeah. Those two things are like can fluctuate from moment to moment to day to day.
That's so bizarre.
It's your active, inactive, and depressed.
You were happy. Depressed because you were there.
No shit.
But just real quick before we go to yours, but so because I mean, as soon as I said that my husband had been here, so first I want to say I made up a story as to why I was there because he was being very intense about. So what brought you in here? Why are you here? Why are you here?
Yeah, they asked me those questions.
And that is the one place where I did lie because I knew that if I said, I'm here because people donated $1,000 for us to, I mean, with the church, if someone had asked us, we would have said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this was different. So I said, and my Jen Coates is going to love this. I said, oh, my husband and I have a friend. Her name is Jen. And he's like, and I said, she was getting into Scientology before she moved to California. She moved back to be with her parents because one of her parents is ill. And she, you know, was looking for comfort with that. And so she turned to Scientology. And she was telling us how great it is. And he goes, he gets super intense. He goes, Jen who? And I said, Canonites? And he goes, Canonites? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, okay, I remember her.
Oh, really?
Right?
Wow.
And I was like, okay. And he goes, I mean, it sounds familiar. I guess I don't, I don't know. It sounds familiar. And I'm like, sure. And then I said, but then, you know, and then she went to California and I said to him, you know, California has so many churches for Scientology. And so there's more people out there that are, you know, followers. And he was like, yeah, it's a great place. It's a great place for us. And I'm like, yep. And I said, she just said that she thought it would be something that we'd be interested in because, you know, she knows that I have autism and, you know, my husband has to deal with me. And so we were, you know, so my husband came actually.
So that part was true then.
Right.
Yeah.
So as soon as I said, my husband came a couple of weeks ago and had a session and actually, you know, I was like, he got some books and donated some things and all this stuff. And they were like, as soon as I said that, this guy was like, oh. And I swear, I'm not usually like hypersensitive to this, but I could see in his head him being like, well, if her husband's doing it, then I have to worry less about convincing her because clearly the husband will take care of that for me. And he kind of ratcheted back the intensity a lot as soon as I said that my husband had all this stuff and that I was going to. And it's funny because there's certain situations I've found as a lady where I can say, well, I have to check with my husband on that, or my husband's taking care of that, or well, my husband, and people will back the fuck off. And,
oh, that works both ways. I could do that too.
Yeah. Oh, the old wife. Yep. Gotta ask the wife, you know? Yeah. So.
Yeah. And I mean, what I did when they got to the buy stuff, I'd already been telling him, you know, I'm a poor writer. And I was like, I just, you know, I can't afford to do this right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it shut him down right away.
Yep.
You know, and it kind of surprised me. They didn't try to push a little harder. But, you know, wow. I asked for some brochures and
So now I want to know what Nick's experience, because Nick is making faces of craziness. So,
yeah, you got the bonus Scientology experience.
And I feel ethically weird about my experience because in my curiosity and because so many people donated so much money, I felt pressured to, like, go in deeper and find out more. And now I have mixed feelings about that. But to the 200 questions thing, my interview or my review on the Oxford capacity analysis was fear, uncertainty, and doubt. She was worried about me. She was worried for me. She expressed genuine interest and care.
I can't let you drive off a lot like this, Nick. But, I gotta fix that. But, fix those tires.
Totally. But it was never, I want the best for you. It's, I'm worried about what will happen to you. It was definitely fear, pressure, like sales pressure. It was.
I would feel personally responsible if something went wrong with you when you leave here without like.
That was said.
Yeah.
I always want to make sure that everyone I talk to, like I would feel bad. I would feel like I didn't do my job. I would feel, you know, personally responsible. And it was not bullying, not intimidating, but.
Pressure. Intense pressure.
If they were very, very careful to never cross that line into full-on bullying or intimidation, which I think is more sinister because they went right up to the line in that regard. It's, yeah, it was never, I want the best for you. It was always like, I don't want this bad thing to happen to you. And it was definitely a hard sell.
Like a fortune teller, the way a fortune teller is like,
it was a cold reading,
but the way it's like something really bad is here in the cards. I don't feel like I should go on. I guess if you wanted to buy another reading, I could try, but I'm very scared of what we'll find out. Like,
make no mistake, the Oxford Capacity Analysis Test is a 200-question cold reading.
If they do it right, I feel, because I feel like you got the full experience.
Yeah.
And Tim got the non-experience.
We aren't really interested in this guy. Experience.
And I got the, I would do the whole experience, but I really got lunch. I got the sandwich I need to eat. So
it was a cold reading for me. She was reading off points on the 10 different variables and or axes, and then she'd kind of wait for me to agree or disagree, and if I agreed, she'd try to relate that better. And I mean, to her, she's probably not even aware of the fact that she's doing a cold reading. She wants to make it fit because she wants to help me, or you know, whatever agenda. And I think it's entirely, I mean, there are people that are convinced that they're psychic, that do psychic readings, that are doing cold readings every day.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think most people who do cold readings are not necessarily aware that that's what they're doing.
Definitely what it was. And that led to us talking about, you know, why I was there, what I wanted to change, what was better or worse or whatever. And I said, well, I don't feel depressed and I don't feel nervous. I'm certainly critical. I consider myself a critical thinker. I consider myself and I talked about how figuring out the Myers-Briggs, that I'm an ENTP, I like to argue. I do like to debate. I can do it, take any side in an argument, that sort of thing. And she's like, well, that's, you know, not winning you any friends. And that's, you know, which that might be true, actually. I mean, there's...
friends is the most important thing you can have.
Right. But and so... whatever it was I said, she steered toward a specific class or a specific book option. And that kind of leads to this next part. So I gave the Church of Scientology $50 to get to sign up for one of their classes.
You did that, people. You did
you
that
made
to me.
Nick spend $50. You did that.
And I feel really bad about giving them.
Well, I appreciate you doing it, so I didn't feel any need to do it myself.
Yeah, but I feel I have serious regret about contributing to them financially, even though it's just $50. And
would
even
you
though,
say you're being overly critical?
Yeah.
I was pretty critical when you told me it
first. Molly was really upset.
I will say, since we're talking about this, I had what I can only describe as an unexpectedly strong emotional reaction. I knew Nick's appointment was at a certain time, and then he was going in to do the thing, and it was an hour and a half later, and I hadn't heard from him, and I was like, oh, and I actually... some of you may have, if your friends might have seen, I posted on Facebook and I was like, like whistling past the graveyard kind of post, like, oh, maybe they got Nick, right? Like, right, guys? Maybe they got him.
And I was there for 2.5 hours.
So finally, when he texted me to say done, I actually, on that post, commented and said, okay, it's okay, he's out. I mean, because I at first was worried that you'd been found out. I know you'd been planning to audio record part of your session.
I did.
And so I was worried that they had found you out and that now being held in some kind of weird Scientology prison holding cell thing.
I went over the audio the day of and again today, and nothing really useful or valuable came of it. It's 2.5 hours of like cell phone in my pocket recording.
Yeah.
So it's really, and so much of that is dead silence from taking the test or waiting for people. But
I was shocked at how upset I got.
Yeah,
when
you
said that you donated
you're
money.
Really upset.
I mean, I was probably the most upset I've been in years about something. It was really shocking to me, and I knew how damaging they were, and I think maybe I knew that more than you did before going into this, because I had done a lot of reading about it and I read a lot of accounts.
I followed the Project Chanalogy stuff, and I was pretty familiar with, you know, a lot of their despicable behavior, but I don't know. I think the curiosity and the feeling like I owe it to, because
the obligation, the fundraiser, sure.
Yeah. And so I, you know, that was where I landed on that. But in between the questions and the interview, I forgot about this part, they had this little like round area with like 8 different TV stations.
Yeah, and did you watch any of the videos? I watched something about L. Ron Hubbard.
The Huck Finn bullshit. The 12 labors of L. Ron Hubbard. He was a child prodigy with 1,000 horses and all of the boats, and then he.
And then he traveled to the Middle East.
And he played. He went bowling with pygmies in the Philippines.
He won medals in war.
Well, according to him and Scientology, he was blinded by muzzle flare on the ship he was captaining in World War II, and he healed himself through his mental powers.
Now that may be. How's this? He may have been blinded temporarily, and then his cells regenerated, and his eyesight came back, because that happens.
It's not what the military medical records state at all. He also claims to have downed 2 submarines, and he dumped all of their mines on a magnetic rock in the middle of the ocean, fired artillery on a log, and then accidentally bombarded a populated island and was relieved of duty. Like, he had a very not...
Tells you his military record is pretty impressive, and it...
It's impressive, but not in the...
And there were, like, 8 or 9 video stations. I was actually disappointed I wasn't able to get to more of those. I would have been
What these DVDs are, Tim. These DVDs are those video
things.
I was so nervous. They stuffed a handful of DVDs in my hand and set me off.
I was so nervous and sweating so hard and so just, like, terrified of like...
They will discover that I'm alive!
Kind of. And so I actually did... In my little interview with the dude, I did say, I didn't say the word atheist, but I said that I didn't really believe in God. And because he was like, oh, you should sign up for these classes. And I'm like, I want to read Dianetics first. And I figured that was kind of hard for them to argue against.
Sure.
I was like, I want to read Dianetics first. And he's like, well, that's probably going to take you a few weeks. And I didn't mean to, but I kind of laughed. I was like, what is it, like 400 pages? and he was like, it's a very difficult read. There's an entire glossary in the back of words because L. Ron, like, because he is saying, because Ron uses words in ways that we're just not even comfortable with. People in the 50s, you know, were way more educated than we are now, but also he was extremely intelligent. And I just wanted to be like, it's so insulting that you automatically are assuming that I am so, that I can't read this. But when I said I didn't believe in God, and would that be a problem? And he was like, I think that when you read Dianetics, that question will be answered for you.
Oh.
Which clearly means he thought Dianetics would make me believe in their God.
I just got to tell you right now, I'm looking at Nick's book, the book that he donated $50
What's the title of it?
The name of the book is How to Improve Relationships. This is the solution to conflicts, and I just want you to know there is a law, apparently, that answers these conditions of being deadly unknown and embracing all activities. This is really what it says. The law would seem to be a third party must be present and unknown in every quarrel for a conflict to exist.
I think the context of that is some Babylonian.
And I think
law.
The third party is the Thetans.
Well,
I believe
It's I'll get to the book thing in a second.
Yeah,
so
but I just love the idea that there's for a quarrel, without a third party,
it's not a
people
quarrel.
Would never
yeah.
have
it's
a conflict.
It's not a conflict. You're not you don't have a conflict. I know you think
so. That book, she didn't give to me after I paid for it. By the way, the book was tax-free because they're a religious organization, and she pointed that out, very specifically. She escorted me to their back classroom area in another building through the Skyway, and when I talk about going back, this is like the second part of my Scientology visit. She handed the book off to the younger woman who's in charge of their classroom learning type area, which is a number of large wooden tables, the very expensive room, full sets of encyclopedias and more dictionaries than I've ever seen in my life, as well as like a few arts and crafts stations for clay or whatever, for like activities that involve that, whatever book session you're on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically self-taught. You sit down with your book and a dictionary, and you read a chapter, and then you write an essay, and then you read a chapter, and you write an essay. And I did 3 of those, and I wrote very impersonally, because
I mean, these books are literally like you know,
workbooks.
Workbooks like you get in college, where you're like, you buy your textbook, and then you've got the workbook that goes with the textbook.
Yeah, this is the workbook.
That's what these are.
Can I see a second?
Can I read one thing quick from it? They're telling a story of a girl, a young girl, who had run away from home and whose parents no longer talked to her. The girl was a clerk in an office, and she was quite despondent and doing very bad work, which at this time became a matter of intense interest to the office manager. Now, ordinarily, the office manager would have dismissed her and, I'm quoting here, found another girl. But employment was critical at the time, and this office manager knew the modern thing to do. He sent for a Scientologist. I just love the idea of someone being like, Janet, get me a Scientologist. We're going to save the girl. I can't get another girl in here. Employment is critical.
So
there aren't enough girls around right now.
Can't get a new office girl.
I might have to hire a man.
If you're familiar with
I'd have to pay him twice as much.
The Project Chanology stuff, or the what is it? Clearly Clear and Open with the documentary. The HBO.
Living Clear.
Going Clear.
Clear is when you are right. It's like it's like Nirvana.
Negative. Well, it's on its way there at least.
Yeah, but it's
So the essays in here are things like, write several examples where you personally observed a strong common reality between two people, or they're very personal. Take an example of an unsuccessful relationship you had in the past, and where arguments and upsets, and you did not get along with that other person, and they want you to analyze your own failed relationships and personal failures. Now, the thing about these essays are, you, once they're done, you tear them out and you give them to Scientology, and they keep them forever and you never get them back.
Correct.
So, every piece of personal information you give them, they keep. And they have, and it's filed, and they can...
And they own it.
They own it. Yep. And so...
Like they own you.
Yes, right. I mean, to some extent, there is some funny shit in here, but there's a lot more scary shit in here.
Well,
the funny stuff reminds me of your college communication course that you're taking right now.
I think the scary part about it is, you know, they it's 50. It's like the first taste is free, except even it's not even free. You know, it's $50 for this workbook, and you know the next class is going to be $100.
Oh, the next class is taking an auditing course, and it's it is like $750 for the weekend, or it's $1,200 for the individual sessions. Yeah. is what he told me, and that may be wrong. Pricing may change depending on where you are, but your mileage may vary.
They always phrase their things in from a very absolute standpoint. Write an essay describes why this quote is true.
Mm-hmm.
The ability to be is more important than the ability to do. The ability to do is more important than the ability to have. And they just start right away, explain why this is true, not could this be true.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there's a chapter in here about the foundation of sexual relationships that has a quote in it that I love, and that is just, those with bad manners are rejected. And rejected is in all quotes.
It's very, caps.
Caps, yes.
I find it super funny that, I mean, this is because I did dialectic behavioral therapy, DBT, which is a very intense style of psychotherapy that involves a lot of workbooks and a lot of this. And it's the best way to describe it is it's a way to give you the tools to deal with the fact that you're fucking crazy and to stop being so fucking crazy or at least be like, aha, I'm recognizing this pattern of behavior. I have this thing that I know I can do to calm myself down. And so it's really good for people who have bipolar disorder, borderline personality disorder, schizophrenia, anything that's like a pretty severe personality or mood disorder. And so this book is so much that. Like, it's so much like, the DBT one time was like one of the workbooks was... talk about a time that you know you were wrong. Why were you wrong? What did the other person say to you that made you think did you know you were wrong at the time? And stuff like that. And so for them to be so anti-psychology and to say that psychology is, I mean, they literally think it's the devil. It is their devil. is psychology and
the IRS quite a while there.
But and psychopharmaceutical medications and all of that, they feel
drugs and alcohol. It's all anything drugs. That affects your brain's chemistry.
They feel that it's all drugs. You're on Abilify for your bipolar disorder, but it's the same as cocaine.
Specifically grabbed that
foundation
DVD.
For a drug free world. Yep. That's one of the DVDs we have.
Yep. They don't mean drug free like crack. They mean drug free like. All of
what's
it.
So I mean, you want to be anti-alcohol drug and all medication like that. Oh, I almost can get behind that more than and psychiatrists are liars.
Yeah.
When this is the shit you're doing, because this is just psychiatry.
Without
this is
the science.
This is just fucking therapy.
Yeah.
This is just a workbook where you talk about your feelings and then you base them, instead of basing them on, you know, case studies and stuff, you're basing them on this one dude's idea of what the world was.
Did you know that unhappiness is only the inability to confront that which is? That's all it is.
He told me that. It's so funny. So I'm wearing this. I've been wearing this necklace. I got it as a gift. It is from Patrick Rothfuss's Kingkiller Chronicles. It's the name of the wind. It's Ori's Brazen Gear. I love it. And this fucking guy, cold read style, says to me. How can I not be as happy as I feel? How does that work? Because I don't understand. That's an emotion. And I did say, forgive me, my brain is very binary, but I don't understand how I cannot be as emotion as I feel emotion.
Right.
Like, you're not as sad as you feel. What? Who says that? Like, you're exactly as sad as you feel. That's what feelings
That's
are.
That's what feelings are, yeah.
So what he said to me was, everyone is constantly experiencing loss, and whether it's big or small, you're constantly experiencing loss and grief. And one of the things that you don't realize are that the tiny little losses that you experience every day can add up to something just as bad and as life, you know, ruining as like losing a parent or a spouse. And he said, for example, maybe you lost your, and he looked right at me and he goes, your favorite necklace or your, and it was just, it was such a fucking hilarious moment of his brain. I act. And I do improv. I can see when someone's searching or reaching for something. And so that blank slate face you get when you're thinking of a word. And then he looked down at my chest and was like, a favorite necklace or and I was just like, God, if he says dog, I'm going to shake this guy's hand. But he didn't. He was like, or a friend or a, and I was like, no.
They have rules in the beginning of the book. I'm not going to read them all, but there are a few that are, do not consume any alcoholic beverage within 24 hours of any course period you're scheduled for. Do not take any drugs while on this course. If you are taking any prescribed medication, please inform the course supervisor first. If you don't know something or confused about course data, ask your course supervisor and do not ask another student. They're very specific about not talking to other people there. And another rule that they had was the dictionaries that they had around. Anytime you ever come to a word, and it's funny, their example is like crepuscular or something like that. And it's like, well, you probably don't know what that word means without a dictionary. And so you're all of a sudden, when you hit a word you don't know, your learning process stops and your brain shuts off. So look it up in a dictionary right away. And then don't continue. Don't assume from context. I'm like, well, crepuscular means like active during the day, twilight or like dawn, or dusk. Like I know that from Boy Scouts and she's
no,
like,
you don't.
Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing is their own fucking Scientological definitions of words.
Yes. He told me about that very clearly.
They use words that we all know, but they have their own Scientology meaning for those words.
And so what that's funny, the thing about your brain shutting off, he said that to me, my dude said that to me too, which was, while you're reading Dianetics, he's like, I can tell it sounds like you think you're a very fast reader, and probably you are when you're reading for pleasure, but this is reading to change your life. And I feel that you need to know that, you know, when you get to a word that you don't know, and he said, you know, it's proven that your brain stops learning and it's called going blank and you'll go blank. And I said, and I actually said, like, you mean like when someone's talking and your mind wanders off? And he's like, Well, sort of, but this is more systemic and very dangerous, because what can happen is your mind can go blank and you'll read and your brain will think that you've read and absorbed the knowledge, but you haven't. And you may not even be aware that you haven't absorbed it because you found that one word that you didn't know. So that's why there's a glossary, and you need to make sure, and they said that too, you need to make sure you look up every word that you don't know.
Yep.
And part of me, it feels to me, or at least it felt to me very much, now that you're saying, especially the part about the course instructor, it reminds me of services being conducted only in Latin.
Oh, yeah.
So that only the priest knew what he was saying. Only the priest could talk to God. Sure, only the priest could read the Bible.
You've got all this specific Scientology language, and you need to have somebody interpret the Scientology language for you in order to be able to understand.
It puts you in the mindset of going to them for answers.
Well, and that they are the keepers of the answers, and that you could someday strive to obtain the
answers. Not answers, Molly. Technology. It's technology.
Yeah.
I really got tired of them talking about the technology that L. Ron
Hubbard. If you knew the science.
The data and the datum that composes.
It depends on what you're saying.
That composes their technology.
The technology comprises the data. The data is composed. No, the technology is composed of the data.
Right.
The technology comprises the data. The whole comprises the parts.
Sure. And it's talking about how this can affect virtually every aspect of your life. You just have to use this technology. They don't say tools. They don't say information. Yeah. They very specifically are using
buzzwords.
Obfuscated language, I feel. If you don't know what obfuscated means, stop the podcast and go to the right now.
For example, this workbook comprises bullshit and lies. Yeah.
If you don't know what that means, please just stop the podcast.
If you don't know the difference between comprised and composed, just use composed. Yeah. Don't use comprised. Don't use it. You don't need to.
If one knows the technology of how to do something and can do it and use it, he cannot be the adverse effect of it.
I felt bad for my guy, I want to say, because he felt like he was a young guy. I would have pegged him around 22, maybe 23. I would have pegged him. No, he is a young guy, and he seemed like a true believer. And he was very, he was earnest and kind, and I didn't feel like, I didn't feel the weird, gross peer pressure that you got, where it was like, ugh, like this is feeling like a hard sell. Never felt like I was getting a hard sell. I mean, to some degree, his job is to try to sign me up for classes, so there was a little bit of that. But
that's not even the hardest sell part yet.
I was in sales, so to some degree, my job was to tell you when I was in sales was to tell you to buy more fucking games. I mean, I get that, but I felt bad for him because I just kept thinking, you're telling me that my happiness that I feel isn't real, and I feel the same way about you, so I guess but the difference between us is the happiness that I feel isn't predatory. It's free, and I don't need other people to be a part of it in order to enjoy myself and like my life. Yeah. And when I said I liked my life, he kind of laughed and was like, he's like, I don't hear that very often. I'm like, that's sad. And he's like, well, I hear it after people have gone through auditing. I was like, well, I actually really like my life, and I'm very happy. I mean, I enjoy everything about my life. There's very little that I don't like right now. And he said, that was when he was like, the happiness you feel isn't actually, you're not mm-hmm. actually feeling it. But also the idea that he said, but couldn't it be better? And I said, well, I mean, everything could always be better, right? And he's like, that's the point. That's all this is. That's what we're about, is everything can be better. And then he said, and it was such a fucking happy and cliche. He's like, I've seen businessmen with their fancy cars and their big houses and their money and their toys and their lives, you know, their lives are being ruined by something like your score here in the critical. He's like, something like that can really ruin your life. And I said, ruin your life? Like, really? Like, it's like lives ruined because they just couldn't get themselves where they needed to be, and they weren't truly happy. And it was just such a funny cliche, the whole he's got all the toys and the money, but he's so sad inside. Rosebud, you know,
it's like that. If it's not Scientology that will fix that problem. But the book you have, Nick, you weren't even supposed to take, right? You're supposed to leave it there.
They never they never specifically said that I could not leave with it, but they said I was instructed to leave it there in a locked room that they have for people to leave their belongings.
They didn't say don't leave with it, but they did say put it over here and don't go.
Yep, they were very protective of it. I never got the book in my hands until I was sitting down at a desk in their classroom area with a course supervisor.
Wow.
That's the first time I got to touch the book that I paid $50 for.
That's funny, because the guy...
I had to be walked to a different building.
The guy I was with, like, popped open the saran wrap on the book and let me hold it and page through it.
I was given a book that I was that was apologized because it's in Spanish. So I was given Dianetics and Escriba de L. Ron Hubbard. And like, I looked at the back and I was kind of reading it as much as I could and I'd kind of laughing a little bit. And he's like, yeah, Spanish. And I was like, oh, I didn't want to be like, no, I mean, I can read some of this and it's stupid. Like, I didn't say that. I was like, oh, yeah, Spanish. It's so funny and not English.
So I don't know what I'm going to do with this book. Maybe we'll find something fun to do with it in the future. But I think the one last thing I want to talk about from my experience is the highest pressure part of this has been since that class, since that day. I was not smart like Tim and Molly. I gave them my real information.
I gave them all my real, they have my phone number, they have my email, and they have my actual address. So I was not smart.
I've been called from three separate phone numbers that are personal, like cell phone numbers. I can tell their cell phone numbers because they can send me text messages, which I've also received, asking, why I'm not coming in, why I'm not answering. Can we talk right now? They always call when I'm asleep or I'm in class and I've never, you know, had the opportunity to answer the phone and tell them to stop.
You can block the
until
numbers.
I know until, yeah. But it's three right. different. Yeah, it's now three different numbers. So this week I answered and said, you know, I'm done. I'm not coming back to this. I have no interest in this. I'm in class and I can't talk right now. If someone says that to you in that tone and those words, you would probably back off or give them room or cease communication altogether. This individual's response was to immediately send me a text message asking me why. And I've had one more call since then from them. They left a voicemail. And so now I don't know if I'm going to start telling them that I'm going to record the conversations and put them up as with the podcast as a regular bit, or let them leave voicemails and put those up, or
I think you need to say,
start blocking numbers, or
that's,
what?
What I think you need to do is I think you need to say very specifically, just if you can, to somebody, if you can ever answer the phone, if they ever call when you're awake, and say, I am asking you to stop calling me. I have no further interest in Scientology. Thank you.
Yeah.
And then from then, block numbers. But also, you could leave, I mean, you could change your outgoing voicemail to say, I do not wish to, I will not answer calls, you know, from the Church of Scientology.
And that's basically something I just didn't want to have to say or deal with. Like,
well, not before the podcast. You got to get some fodder for
in the back of the class.
Yeah, that too.
No doubt.
I haven't gotten
I did not give them my phone number. I'm not going to let them call me.
So I gave them they got my phone number because when I called in to ask if I could move up my appointment, then when they printed out my results, my phone number was on the thing. And I actually said to the guy, I'm like, how did you get my number? And he said, oh, from when you called in. And I said, that feels like a violation of trust to me. And he said, well, you called us. And it's but I told him that I wanted to read Dianetics before I made any decisions. So they said they were going to call me in a few weeks because, you know, it's going to take that long to read that really long book.
And to look up all those words.
I got to look up a lot of words. I'm a lady. I don't know words. But
dictionaries are hard.
Yeah. And so is our concept of an ever-loving volcano god. So, I mean, you got to really get your brain around it.
The volcano god is actually evil and bad.
I know. I mean, that's my new worshiping. I'm going to be a Satanist for Scientology. I'm going to worship the bad one. Can we start that?
Can you be a Satanologist?
Can you get in the but like
it'd
you know
be like a Xenu worshiper?
Like a Xenu worshiper, yeah, like
an evil Scientologist.
Like somebody who's trying to bring all the Thetans back to people.
An antagonist.
Yeah.
I've never understood if you're trying to get rid of Thetans or get Thetans.
No, Thetans are the
souls.
Sp- yes, for lack of a better word, souls that are have been fractured and are in us mm-hmm. that give us our sentience and whatnot. And we are
came
not
from another planet.
They we don't in a just have in individuals thetans. We have a mix of them because they were all fractured up when they nuked those DC-10s.
Yeah, they got put into a volcano and they all like exploded out. I gotta read it.
Well, none of that stuff is anywhere except. Like Project Chainology and the leaks, the WikiLeaks.
And that South Park episode.
For them. The South Park episode. Going Clear talks about it quite a bit. There's some high-level members of mm-hmm. Scientology that are no longer members that are in that documentary. It's really terrifying and scary and made me just a little tiny bit nervous about doing this episode. They have bigger fish to fry than
three
fucks in Tim's basement.
I'll tell you what, I relish it. I welcome it.
Oh, great. You told them it's my basement.
They don't have your address. I'm looking forward to seeing if they contact me because they said they were going to contact me in a few weeks to give me time to read Dianetics. So if they do contact me, I have decided that what I'm going to say just right off the bat is, yes, I read Dianetics and I found it to be fairly silly and I'm sorry, but I'm not religious. I don't believe in God. And I thought that it was going to be more real and it's just not working for me. And then I'm going to say, I didn't realize how anti-psychology Scientologists are and the modern psychology saved my life. Legitimately, and you're never going to be able to talk me down from that. And the fact that you guys are opposed to, psychopharmaceuticals and therapy and psychiatry and electroshock and all that means that I could never be a part of this. I just can't. I feel like it would be disingenuous and turning my back on everything that fixed me. Genuinely. And if they really want to push it, I'll be like, how my numbers were up so high and the happy and stable? That's because they fixed my brain with electricity. So, I mean, legitimately, I feel like that's going to be one place where my love for blunt, complete, total, bluntness is going to be good, but they haven't called or contacted me yet. So
like I say, I didn't give them my phone number. And I understand. While I understand you being really pissed at Nick for spending $50,
I got over it. But it was just more of a. I was shocked because before he went in, we were very much like. We didn't say no money is the thing. What we had said was
it wouldn't have happened.
We joked around so much about getting taken in by them. I mean, the three of us all did.
Yeah.
And the joke being, Molly's so easily suggestible and Molly's going to be the one that gets taken in. And then my fucking husband, who is so like anti-spending money and anti-everything else, is like, give the money. I was like, holy shit, like they are bad. Like this is really bad.
Well,
so
part of me was like, well, if I don't spend $50 and go this far, I can't find out what's next.
Yeah.
It's like,
curiosity.
There was the desire to know how deep the rabbit hole went.
That was a big part of it.
And Nick had already done it, so it didn't last very long, and maybe that's why.
I wonder how many people end up, in this cult and separated from their families and friends and as true believers in this way because they were just smart people who were curious mm-hmm. and then found, for whatever it was, it filled that hole that everyone has that I fill with comedy and taking my pants off on stage and some people fill with video games and some people fill with hunting and others fill with Jesus. And, if it just filled that hole for them and they were probably joking too, like, oh, I'm going to go check this out. It's going to be funny.
I wouldn't have a problem with it if it wasn't so blatantly financially exploitive.
Yeah. That's how I go to the Catholic Church. That's what I said to you.
You have to pay for your enlightenment. You have to pay for every step of it.
Yep.
It's there are many churches where you don't have to give them a dime. I mean, they want your money. They ask you for your money.
Yeah, there's always an offertory at church, but there's never a situation where they're like, you're going to go to hell if you don't give
Sorry, you can't come to church next Sunday unless you give us
$12. $5 a head. Like, you can come in, but it's $5.
And that's what Scientology says, is every step of the way you have to pay more and more money.
Because that demonstrates that you're serious about it. That's what he told me. Because when he told me how much it costs, I actually said, that's a lot. That's a lot of money. And he said, you have to ask yourself, like, can you put a price on your happiness? Can you put a price on feeling, like, just feeling free?
Yep.
And I imagine but that's exactly what they say at church too. Can you put a price on? I mean, you're supposed to tithe.
This is what they said at Grace, basically.
You're supposed to tithe 10% of your income. Yeah. Can you put, or even the people at Grace, they were saying, you know, you're saying you can't afford to take 2 months off to go build houses and spread the word of God. So God's not worth 2 months of your time to you, is what you're saying.
Yep.
And that's a very manipulative way to put it.
It's super manipulative.
It's just like that. I mean, if you put it in simpler terms, it seems so much clearer. If a stuck up girl said to you, "Oh yeah, I mean, I'll go to prom with you, but you have to get a limo and buy my dress, and we have to go to the most expensive restaurant," and you were like, "That seems like a lot," and she said, "I guess you have to ask yourself, how much is it worth to you to go out to prom with me?" Right. That seems way more exploitative and manipulative.
I don't want
to
go to prom with that.
But when it's how much can you, when it's God or your happiness or your family, or can you put a price on feeling better? Like it's crazy.
Quality of life, mental state, your supernatural abilities.
So I hope I don't know. So like, I guess if you guys had to sum up your experiences with it in kind of like a sentence or like a word, how would you go? Nick, I'll have you.
A greedy and benign shadow of something incredibly sinister.
All right. Tim?
I don't know, a letdown?
I mean,
it was a letdown.
Yeah.
Especially after Nick's experience, I was hoping for more.
Yeah. For mine, I think I would say just transparent. So transparent to me. Like, I no part of me was taken in by it at all. And even if I didn't know what it was, it was just more autism energy healing, man. It was
cold
just
reading.
More laying on of hands and Reiki and essential oils and the whole
it's a miracle. It's the same bullshit with different clothing.
Yeah. I want to thank everybody personally and just in general. And even if you didn't donate and you just watched Die Laughing or just all of our listeners, everybody who supported the idea, we understand you can't always give money. We're not Scientology. We don't expect you to pay to be able to get to the next level with us. So it really meant the world to us that you guys donated so much. And I mean, it was the biggest money-raising challenge at Die Laughing.
It was.
It raised the most money. Again, for the second year in a row, we raised the most money for our challenge. So our listeners are the best. I mean, way better than Apropos of Nothing.
So suck on that high five, guys.
No, but
we hope you guys got whatever you wanted.
Also,
for those
just
of you who donated, yeah. got
also
you
seriously, like Carr Hagerman is honest to God the reason this happened. I mean, to some degree, because
at the
last minute when we were like 200 some bucks away, and it was like 2 minutes left, and we weren't probably gonna have to do it.
I think he
put us over, and we got a note while we were recording that said that we had just gone over. You might have heard it on the show.
And you have a friend in the front row.
You have a friend in the front row, and it was Carr in the front row flipping us off.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. We looked up to them the note, and he was in the front row, double deuces, just
yeah. It was great. But I
so far, we hope you feel
burn in hell.
You feel like you got.
Hopefully, you know what? I don't know, I'm even gonna say hopefully. Fuck it, bring it on. If they come after us, I will laugh.
We'll record like, another podcast.
Not only that, I know a lot of lawyers, so
I'm pretty sure anything we've read or disclosed that, because all this shit is copyrighted, it's all fair use.
Yep.
And if I bought this book and if I own this book, I can do whatever I want. I can give it away.
A donation. They might say that you don't own it. I don't know, but I can't imagine they care.
They can come and get it.
How's this? If Scientology thinks I said anything disparaging about them, then maybe they should worry about what their facts are, because all I did was say what happened to us.
I think what they have to worry about right now is HBO.
Yeah, they're probably frying that fish.
I'm really excited for you two to see Going Clear.
Yes, well, please watch Going Clear on HBO if you can.
Scary and damning. And,
I'm excited to watch it.
I feel like... I mean,
they've already come out with a statement about that, saying that everybody on that thing was basically kicked out of Scientology and it's just all sour grapes.
Oh, that's what they always say.
Kicked out of Scientology.
Mormons say that too.
After being abused and locked in a trailer for 25 days and
that's what Mormons say too. Mormons are the same thing. Oh, it's not like that. They're just
all
mad.
I know, but it's like Scientology has already come out and basically discredited every person.
It is a dangerous plague upon the world.
The scariest thing about that documentary, I think, I came away with, maybe, is not the amount of money, which is staggering. It's more than you think, by far. But it's that the IRS is ultimately who decides what is and isn't a religion in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, you know, I think...
With your tax-exempt status. That's the big determining factor, is the IRS.
The thing about Scientology that I find that's so sinister is, you know, everybody... you can sit there and you can say, yeah, my life is great, and I feel my life is great, and yet there are things that I don't think are perfect. There are days that I feel that.
You're a human fucking being.
Everybody feels that way, and Scientology preys on that, because it's coming to you and it's saying, you know what, your life isn't perfect. And you say, honestly, well, of course my life isn't perfect. Nobody's life is perfect. My cat died. I'm sad about that. Whatever the fuck it is. And they're like, well, we can make it better. And so many people want that. They want their life to be better. Yeah, they're being sold a bill of goods that they somehow deserve.
Yep.
Kind of thing.
What I thought was when he was talking about Loss of Me, because you know my fictional version of Jen, you know, was worried about, you know, losing someone, and what he had said was when you're you know, clear, and when you've, you know, really gone through a lot of auditing, especially grief doesn't affect you the same way. You're able to you know, experience it and move through it with you know, with more grace and more composure and all of that. And all I could think was, that sounds awful.
It does.
I want to rage against the dying of the light. Like, I want to cry. I cried just the other day out of the fucking blue because of my dog. Just out of the blue for no reason, just started to fucking bawl. Because I just remembered that he wasn't here and he was never going to be here again, and that I missed him. I would never want to give that up.
There's nothing wrong with grief. That's the most ridiculous thing in the world, is suggesting to people, well, you know, it'll be better if you don't feel.
It wasn't even that. It was that what you feel will be through a different lens, and therefore you'll be able to, because feelings aren't rational.
And you're feeling it wrong now.
You're not really feeling it, Tim. The feeling you're feeling isn't actually being felt.
It's a lie.
We're going to tell you how to feel.
Yep. Right. So we're going to skip 5 questions, guys, because we just really wanted to focus this on what you paid for and what you put us through. If you're wondering, if you've ever wondered for yourself, what's that Scientology thing all about, we recommend don't bother. Don't go. Don't. If nothing else, if you're a native Minnesotan, it will make you cry to see what they've done to the science museum.
I know. That was just super disappointing.
I spent so much time in that building.
I went through the building and up and out through the skyway to their next office where the Science Museum office
and all
was.
All I could think about was what had been there before.
Yep.
There were
actual science.
Fucking spitting dinosaurs in that building.
And no goddamn musical stairs.
Yeah. I wish there were there, though, to drive them insane, because it would.
All right,
I was like, I remember the Omni Theater was right in there. He's like, oh yeah, we show films in there. Like, I'm like, no!
Oh, God.
How can you do that to my Omni Theater, you
asshole? What hath Ron wrought?
All right, we have been Geeks Without God. You guys have been the donating people that put us through this goddamn miserable hell. No, seriously, though, thank you. Yeah. It's amazing. And we're going to try to figure out how the hell we're going to top it next year. So if you have suggestions for what you think would be what we should do next time at Die Laughing, by all means, comment on here and let us know. Please like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, rate us on iTunes, tell your friends, tell your neighbors, wear the buttons, live the life. I don't know. Be clear, guys. Be clear. And
let's all go clear together. Here.
Let's all go clear. I will see you guys next Tuesday. That's what Nick says.
Yeah. Because
it spells cunt. So.
Oh, I get it.
Bye.
Hey, Molly, it's funny you ended the podcast with that, because the last thing I said as I left the Church of Scientology was, see you next Tuesday.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Need more Geeks Without God? Go to our website, read our blog posts, find us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter at Geeks Without God.
Social media!
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
The biggest problem is that, you know, I gave them a fake phone number, and of course I probably gave them somebody's phone number.